Hello, good evening. Welcome to another podcast by Guns and Yellow Ribbons. This is Game Week 33, where we preview the Premier League's fixtures coming up this weekend. It's myself, Gunnar Hilsey, Capo Dan. Now he's famous. He's been in the papers as well. And Posh Gunnar in Dell. We will be looking at the Arsenal and Aston Villa game. We'll also look back at the Bayern Munich game and much, much more. Enjoy the show.
Thanks for listening to Guns and Yellow Ribbons, an Arsenal podcast by Arsenal fans for Arsenal fans. Follow. Get ready for the world's greatest Arsenal podcast. Welcome to another podcast by Guns and Yellow Ribbons. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody. I hope you didn't notice my little mistake there at the beginning. We gave the outro rather than the intro, but I don't think anybody would really notice, will they?
What happened here, mate?
I don't know. Mate, I told you I'm not feeling well. I'm on lemonade again. These midweek ones, not having beer is...
Should we start again? Because you started the intro saying another episode, like you didn't want to be here. Then you got your double intro. Should we just skip it and start again?
No.
Fergie's a new record. You've made a balls up before the pictures have even come on. It's a new record, Fer.
I have done it before, Trevor. I have done it before. Yeah. Del and Dan, we had the Bayern Munich game that we were at. Trevor, you couldn't go to the Bayern Munich game for various reasons, but you are going out to Munich next week. We're going to talk about that game first, but also then we're going to look at the fixtures for the weekend, and we're going to feature clearly the Arsenal Aston Villa game, and then we'll go through our normal sort of format. Henty noticed. we'll go through our normal format and look at our the other games and what we think they're going to do. Let's have a look first of all at the Bayern Munich game first and foremost. There was quite a lot to unpack on this one. First of all, there was no away fans in the stadium, but there were away fans by the stadium. There was away fans outside the stadium, probably about 200 or 300 Munich fans gathered out with a banner out there saying, "We're going to London anyway, Wembley calling, FC UK, the UEFA." Fair play to them for travelling. I expect many of them were already based in London anyway. And then they also gave us a firework display just to celebrate that we were going to go to Munich in a few days' time. Dan, what did you make of the atmosphere in the ground? It was in the stadium itself, because we know we'll talk about the atmosphere on the concourse separately.
Honestly, watching back, and I think we're in the stadium as well, like at the start, the atmosphere was unreal. It sounded one of the loudest I've ever heard in that stadium. There's people complaining about the atmosphere throughout the game, but I think what people forget is the fans are learning a bit again, same as the players are. And I think the fans got a bit nervous as well. And I don't really blame them, because I think so many fans have not had this for so long that they were so excited and so up for it as well, that when we sort of went behind, you could feel the nerves in the stadium. But I felt like they pulled it back. I thought the fans did really well. Strange atmosphere with no away fans in there, but... like when you watch back, if you go and watch the replay on TNT, the sound at the start when the lineups came out, you could hear the LA in the background. And honestly, I think the loudest I've ever heard it in that stadium.
Yeah, I did watch back on TV, and the commentators were actually struggling to get their voices across. Del, the away end looked very strange, but what I did like is, I think Arsenal, I doubt if somebody brought in the banners themselves that look brand new. I think Arsenal actually paid and put the banners where normally you see the away end, they would have their banners along there. So it really did make it feel like our house, don't you think?
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think the lack of away fans possibly contributed to some of the periods of silence that Dan mentioned a moment ago. It was a really strange feeling. It's like when they scored, for example, the ground for a brief few seconds went silent. When you saw fouls given against us or for them, normally you get like a bit of an uproar from the away support, but not having any of that did seem a bit, it was strange. It was really strange. But I love the way the extra Arsenal fans in there helped contribute to the atmosphere. I thought it was fantastic, absolutely fantastic.
I don't know about you guys, it felt like I could hear the stadium breathe at times. Like everyone together, you could sense the nerves. You could see when they were sort of gasping and then sort of the cheering and yeah.
You could feel like the excitement of the first in the first 20 minutes or so, and the raucous and the noise and when Saka's goal, we'll talk about it in a minute, when Saka's goal went in on the 12th minute, it was chaos. There was bodies everywhere. It was just unreal. And that made the noise go even louder. But then as they got back into the game, you could feel, as you said, the nervousness, but also my voice wouldn't have carried on for much longer. I think people needed to take a little bit of a break every now and then. And as the game settled down, especially coming up towards half time, not many people left the seats that early. Most people stayed right through till half time. But the game did type of peter out and flatten out just before half time, as did the crowd. But the crowd in the second half came back really, really strong. And towards the end, as we could see, the substitutions were made. We could see the tactics were changed and there was a more attacking formation. I think at that point, the crowd really started to get behind the team further. Trevor, you watched it from afar. Is that a good summary of like how the crowd was as it came across on the telly? Because I know they mess about the microphones sometimes.
Yeah. No, it was just, I thought the atmosphere sounded absolutely breathtaking before the game, and when Saka scored, it lifted even more. I'm not prepared to think about the Bayern Munich fans being there or not being there. I'd like to think that the Arsenal fans were that raw because they'd have drowned them out anyway. Every ground will go quiet if it goes 2-1 down in a Champions League quarterfinal first leg at home. Every ground goes down. But what I was really proud of was that period of silence or the dropping of the atmosphere slightly didn't last for long. Even at 2-1 down, the Arsenal fans were back at it. And I was really proud of them. I thought they did the side, the club, the team, and themselves really proud. They really did do themselves proud. As for the 200 Bayern Munich fans that have come across and stood outside the stadium, they've had a long journey and missed the game. I don't quite get it, to be honest.
I'm sure they were watching on their phones or something. Let's look at the lineups anyway. So the lineup was Raya, White, Saliba, Gabriel, Kivior. We'll talk about Kivior. Rice, Jorginho, Odegaard, Saka, Martinelli and Havertz. A great lineup, in my view. A lineup that has been really successful in the Premier League, Trevor. But a lineup that I think Bayern Munich could see, as City did a little bit the other week, could see that there was a slight chink in our armour with slight inexperience by a lot of the players who haven't been in Champions League, but in particular, Jakub Kivior.
Yeah, look, right, that's the team I would have chosen. I have no problem with the team that Mikel Arteta chose to put on the football pitch to start. I thought it was our best 11 to get the job done. Kivior, I honestly think that one mistake that was brought on by a succession of errors or under pressure passes, I think people are remembering that more than anything. Yeah, he struggled a bit, but I don't think he was that bad. He was our weak link on the night. Like I said it, you know, against City, but I don't think he was as bad as some people made out. But then we never go in too heavy on the players on this show, do we? I thought he's a young lad. He's still learning. It was a massive, massive stage. He's come under pressure. And the goal that came from him, it started earlier. It wasn't him. The problem didn't lay with Jakub Kivior. The problem laid earlier on in the move, which I know we're going to talk about in a minute, Ferg. So I was happy with the lineup to recap. It's the team I would have chosen. As for Kivior, I'm not going to get on the lad's back. There was more to it than him on the night.
Dan, lineups we've gone through. We went 1-0 up on 12 minutes. Saka's goal. I think it came from a ball that was released by Odegaard, who was playing a little bit deeper. Fantastic goal. It didn't look like anything was on at that stage. Well, in fairness, we were dominating the game and Bayern were getting nowhere. What did you make of Saka's goal and our starting performance then in that first 15 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, the typical performance that we start with normally at home anyway. I mean, we're always pretty sort of dominant and on the front foot. I thought the team looked like they were really up for it. I thought the crowd was up for it. And obviously we got the goal that I thought would have kicked it on a little bit more. But Saka doesn't get enough of those for me, in my opinion. And, you know, the way he bent it around, I think it was Eric Dier that came out and he bent it around him. Brilliant, brilliant goal. Pretty much the perfect start, I'd say, the first 15 minutes. I don't think I could have asked for any more after 15 minutes than what we saw. I don't really know what changed, to be honest with you, but I think from that point, I think the subs at half-time just showed a little bit about maybe where we were slightly lacking and a little bit of control in midfield where Zinchenko comes in. And I think that made a bit of a difference at times. I think you see that maybe with the second goal, maybe not another body in there as well to help play out. So maybe that's why we didn't keep momentum. I think they got out on the counter a little bit too much, too easy after that. They're a very dangerous side. And I think we don't often see wingers like that in the Premier League, certainly not two of them, one on either side. So I think that's obviously something new for us as well. And probably where we need to tighten up for the second leg.
Mm. Ben White, Dell could have made it 2-0, and I think a 2-0, we're looking at a completely different game and possibly a poor buy-in this season. I'm not saying a poor buy-in team, because look at the squad, was a really good team, but a poor performing Bayern, I think they could have capitulated.
Yeah, I'm not going to blame Ben White at all. I mean, if a striker has that chance, I'd expect more of him. But for a defender to have that chance, I could never say, yeah, he should put that away or he shouldn't do. Yeah, maybe he should have done better, maybe he shouldn't have done. But the reality is, that's not his job. He just found himself in the right place, the right time. Another day, he scores that goal and we're talking a different story. But the reality is, he did something much later after that that, for me, was much more important than putting that ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, yeah, true. Gnabry equalised on the 18th minute. It's 1-1. Barnes' first goal came from mistake, starting from David Raya. He wasn't sure where he was going. If he stays back, it's an easy pass back to him and we stay in possession. Then Gabriel is forced to put it wide and he loses the ball and he gets caught in transition. For me, what I said on the night, Dan, that David Raya just looked like he was caught. He just froze and didn't give Gabriel an option. As I've said a second ago, if he had just dropped back a little, Gabriel could have gone to him out to Saliba, ball gone. Or even, in fairness, you could easily have said Gabriel could put in Rosette if he was unsure.
Easy to say, to be honest with you. Like, I think, you know, there's a comment from Marnie as well that says Raya should have cleared the ball. It's easy to say they should clear the ball after you've made a mistake, right? But the identity of this team is that we keep the ball, we keep the pressure on, and that's what we try and do. I think the whole team could have done better there. Raya maybe could have been a little bit deeper. Gabriel maybe could have passed the ball a bit quicker. Jorginho, I think, had a little slip. Maybe, you know, Kivior wasn't there as an option as well. Look, there's a few different things there for the team. So I think it's a bit harsh criticising the team on there. We made a mistake. We got punished. And that's what happens in the Champions League. Probably in most other games in the Premier League, other than the top three sides, you probably get away with that half the time. We didn't get away with that because they're such a good side. And I would also say we're a little bit more open at home. We do concede more goals at home. I don't see that happening too much away from home where we are a much tighter team.
Trev, the Bayern went ahead with a Kane penalty. It was like, you know, it was written in the stars that Kane was definitely going to get a penalty and score. Always does. He's had 15 goals against Arsenal in his career. Eight of those have been penalties. Well, I can have a signed photograph.
Unfortunately, I've not quite reached the heights of Trev on Sky yet. So if I get to that level, then maybe I can start dishing out signatures. But there's still only one superstar on this podcast.
Thank you. I'm getting very blushed.
No, definitely. I didn't mean you, Fergus. Maybe this one. This Fergus is the superstar.
Yeah,
but maybe,
Trev, talk me through this penalty then by Kane. Again, it looked like one of the two mistakes that the team... And we've managed to get a draw out of this game. I think we dominated the game. I think we were very, very strong in most parts. But on these two occasions, we just made a couple of mistakes and we paid the price. Talk me through this.
I think that you're exactly right, Fergus. I think that we were the best side on the night. We were a better side on the night. Gave away two goals that are really unusual for us this year. They shocked me a bit because Arsenal don't do that this season. They don't do that. So I'm now hoping that that's their mistake and we're going to come back in the second leg and put it right. The Kane penalty, you know, it's strange because I had a little giggle because Raya dived about 5 minutes before Kane kicked the ball, you know. Raya's knees were on the floor diving to the right. Yeah. And Kane, I'm sure that Kane had a smile on his face as he gently rolled it in the other side. I mean, I thought that was more of a mistake from Raya than the first one, to be honest, you know. But it had to happen, didn't it? As you said, it was written in the stars that Kane was going to score a penalty. I don't know when we're going to talk about it, Ferg, but for me, that's not the talking point of the night with Harry Kane.
No,
we're going to cover that shortly, aren't we, you know, because I've got a lot to say about that. I'm very opinionated on it, on things that can be dangerous and that could be dangerous. But no, look, we gave away two goals, as I just said, that are highly unusual for the Arsenal this season. Well, it was the first for the Arsenal to give away goals like that this season. And I'm ready to go to Munich next week now thinking we won't do that again. And as Dan rightly said, actually, you've shot me down a bit, Dan, because I was ready to raise it myself. We're a better defence away from home. We're a better defence away from home. We don't open up so much. We've only got to score one goal over there. I'm comfortable with us going there. It may come back and bite me on the arse, but right in this moment of time, I'm comfortable with us going to Munich with a 2-2. A home draw in a Champions League game in the first leg isn't as bad as a lot of people think. The pressure is still on the home team to come out and play back at their place, and they'll leave us a bit of space, and I think we'll do the business.
Yeah. No, I do agree, Trev, and I think it suits us a bit more to be a bit more sort of closed away from home and then hit them on the break a bit. But I don't know if it's a concern to you, but I think we mentioned this before. I don't think that is the first time we've made those sort of mistakes. And we've been so good defensively this season that actually I think we only tend to concede goals where we make a mistake. And I'm thinking back to the Liverpool game where we had that sort of mix-up where there was an own goal, and also the game against Brentford at home when there was a mistake. It seems to be we can see goals at home only when we make mistakes. And I wonder if it's a bit of a mentality approach that we are a lot more attacking and forceful at home, that maybe a little sort of slight lapse in concentration or something that means that we make a few mistakes. But I do think we need to improve our home record in terms of clean sheets and our defence.
I'm just so surprised that we have got the best defence in the Premier League. And on the night, they were the weak link, Saliba and Gabriel, along with, you know, Kivior at times. Del, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we can't ignore the fact we've got a very young side and the lack of Champions League experience may play something into it. The occasion maybe gets them. I don't know. I'm not saying that is the case. Not it's not. But I can forgive the mistakes because what they do outside that, I touched on it earlier on, Ben White, to stop us going 3-1 down. Ben White, it was his error that led to that chance in the first place. It was a soft header cleared. It came straight back at us. Odegaard was never catching Sane. Absolutely never catching him in a million years. And for me, that's one of the best tackles I've seen in a long time. Ben White stopped a 100% a goal there, without a shadow of a doubt. So the errors we make, I can forgive because we make up for it in other areas. Because if we hadn't have made those areas, those errors, and then we'd have conceded that goal, we would just have a different talking point, right? It's just all of a sudden it goes from talking about one goal going in to another goal going in and one good defensive mistake to a defensive error. It makes no difference to me. I still think, and I stand by the fact what you said, we've got one of the best defences in the league, if not in Europe at the moment. I do think our two centre-halves in particular are superb. Did they have their best game? Maybe not, no. But as Trev said, we are more than capable of going there and we're a lot closer. We're a lot of a tighter unit going away from home. So I do think and I do believe we'll be a lot better defensively over there.
Trevor, I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about this, but there's one man who's like the reincarnation of Shearer in my view, because Shearer's always done it before, where he backs into players, bring players up onto his back, renowned for cheating, and because he wore an England shirt he could get away with murder. Another guy is the dribbler from N17, Harry Kane. So this is, I'm not playing any videos because the videos got chopped the last time, but this is the moment where Harry Kane is looking back to check to see where Gabriel is. When you see it, he actually looks back to see where Gabriel is. You can clearly see Gabriel is looking at the ball and tracking the ball. And seconds later, with both feet still on the ground, I'll just get rid of the banner so people can see it. With both feet still on the ground, he backs into him, raises his elbow and garrots Gabriel. Yellow card, free kick. Trevor, over to you.
Well, it's what we come to expect now from the refs and the VAR people. And he's got away with it against us and other clubs hundreds of times, you know. Why they class him as different to anybody else, I don't know. But the key points there for me are he's not jumping for the ball, so there's no reason for his arm to be in the air. He's not jumping for the ball. It's not a natural reaction to jump for the ball. As you just rightly said, Fergus, Gabriel is looking at the ball, so the ball's coming in. Kane's got no intention of going anywhere near that ball. No intention of going anywhere. He don't even know where that ball is at that time. All he's doing is looking to line Gabriel up. That's all he's doing. And that's what makes it, the look behind is what makes it deliberate, without a shadow of a doubt, you know? And then, of course, he hits Gabriel, and he hits Gabriel hard. Gabriel's head goes whacking back. You know, it weren't no play acting. He absolutely battered him. And it's a yellow card. And I'm thinking, this ain't England now. This is European refs. And I'm waiting for VAR to flash up on the screen because I'm watching at home. I'm thinking, VAR's got to look at this and nothing. And I was absolutely gobsmacked. But he does it, right, because he gets away with it for some strange reason. He keeps getting away with it. And as long as he does, he's going to keep doing it. But one day, hopefully not, I've said it before and it hasn't happened yet, but one day he's going to seriously injure someone with what he does. He's going to seriously injure someone with what he does, Harry Kane. And, you know, Tottenham fans will look on and laugh and say we're biased. But fact of the matter is, it's not just Arsenal he does it against. He's got away with it for clubs all over Europe. And
he's done it for England too. He's not playing for Tottenham now. He's playing for Bayern Munich. And there's nothing to do with Tottenham. We're just saying the fact that Harry Kane has a tendency to, he's a big, strong lad. It's his tactic to back into people. He makes a bit of nuisance of himself. But what he's done there is a red card because he has, if he hadn't looked back, if he'd just gone back and he was trying to lift himself with his arms as players do, you could type of say, well, maybe there's an excuse. But his feet don't even leave the ground. He does look and take aim and he fires. So for me, when I saw it live in the stadium, Trevor, I spoke to you afterwards, when I saw it live in the stadium, I thought, yellow card, free kick, move on. It's only when I saw it the next day on Twitter and I could actually see the footage from TV that I went, oh, Christ, everyone is right, it is a red card. Del, what was your view on this?
100% a red card. I mean, I'm not going to go over what you guys have gone over without a doubt, but you may remember last season he did the same thing to Gabriel from behind. He's gone straight through him like a steam train, and Gabriel's flown about like a rag doll. This guy's got previous. He's an absolute scumbag. I'm sorry for any Harry Kane fans out there. I can't stand the guy for England or for Tottenham. Can't stand him. But it's funny. I wanted to jump in on what you said about VAR there, not checking it. So I thought the same thing, but it turns out VAR did check it. There were four VAR instances in that game, which were all checked by VAR. Which highlights, I know we're all quick to jump down VAR's back in the half of time, but VAR ruled that quite quickly that wasn't a red card offence, apparently. That was one of them. There's an article on Sky Sports. There was four events in the game that were checked by VAR, deemed whatever they gave. So VAR did actually check that and said the referee's on-field decision was correct, which is why I went back. I'm baffled by that.
I'm not sure they did because I heard the commentary with McCoist, and McCoist made the comment about we can't hear, like in the Premier League, we can't hear the talk back from the VAR, but we normally get a banner on the bottom of our screens. And I don't think it might be another incident I'm talking about, Del.
They did end up checking it for very brief.
Yeah, they did. Okay. Basically, they were saying this, and this is a good talking point, I think, because in the Premier League, we make such a big song and dance of VAR. I mean, we've all been in the Emirates when a big screen comes up and it says VAR check, potential, whatever it may be. They don't do that in Champions League. They don't do that in European football. They just get on with it, and it's a lot quicker. So although we don't necessarily agree with this decision, me being one of those people, I think it's completely wrong, and I think that's a blatant red card. The VAR was used. It was quick. Every decision which was reviewed by VAR was extremely quick, and as it should be. Although on this one, I think they have got it wrong.
See, okay. Matthew makes a point here.
Not so sure on that, really.
No, I'm not so sure either. But Matthew makes a point here as well that Danny Murphy said players look behind to see where the defender is. It's normal. Absolutely, players look behind to see where the defender is. But they look behind to see where the defender is so that they can play the ball away from the defender when the ball's coming to them. Not when the ball's still about 10 yards away and they're looking behind just purely to throw an elbow. They look behind to see where the defender is. They do, with the plan of playing the ball and beating the defender, not of knocking him out with an elbow. Matthew, I'm sorry, son. There's two sides to this. I know there's two sides, but Harry Kane ain't cute. Harry Kane is very clever and very lucky.
I'll tell you what, though. The only thing I would say with that, I think it's one of those ones that, to use a Wenger phrase, is a bit of an orange card. I think if the ref gives a red, VAR don't overturn it. If they give a yellow, they don't turn it into a red. And I think the only thing that I can think of is he looks behind him as if he wants to then see where he is and then pin him. And then when you look to pin a defender to stop him sort of wrestling and getting in front of him, Gabriel was also a little bit lower down, so he catches him a little bit higher. So that's the only thing I can think of that is the reason why they've not given it as a red card. My only sort of caveat to that is if you're going to pin a defender, his arm position looks a little bit weird where his elbow is a little bit higher. And it looks like he's trying to pin him, but also catch him at the same time. So I think he's tried to be cute and I think he's got away with it. But I think he's got his intention, which is to catch Gabriel. So for me, that's what makes it a red card. But he's been so cute with it that I think he's got away with it for that reason.
Yeah. I think you've nailed it there. I think you've absolutely nailed it there, Dan. I think that's exactly what it was. He knew what he was doing, but he went about it in a way that he knew he'd get away with what he was doing. So I see your point, Matthew, in the comments. I really do. And it has to be clear and obvious. And that is the key thing here. It's not clear and obvious. But in Harry Kane's head, I'm pretty sure that he knew exactly what he was doing there.
Yeah.
Mm. Conscious of the time, because we've got a lot of football to cover, the next thing I want to talk about is the impact of substitutions. The substitutions that were made at halftime, first of all, Kiwior that was taken off. Zinchenko came on, allowed for a bit more mobility in our defence. And then we had Trossard and Jesus come on the impact of Jesus and Trossard, and Jesus made the goal for Trossard. Dan, it was unreal, the impact of these guys, wasn't it? And some of the tactics, I don't know if anybody's had a chance to watch. If you're on YouTube, not only do you click and subscribe to us, go over to 442. And the guy, Alan, I can't remember what the surname, done a thing about the tactics on 442 about how Arteta changed it. He dropped Rice and Odegaard back. He pushed Zinchenko and White up. And that really just hampered those wide wingers that you were talking about earlier, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? Firstly, I think just round of applause to the gaffer for his changes, because I think he's changed the game there and he's done very, very well. And a round of applause to Trossard. I honestly feel like he's our best finisher in the club at the minute. And he seems to make a difference in so many big, big games. He scored against Liverpool. He scored, I think, the winner against Everton earlier in the season. And he scored the one in against Porto as well. He seems to score. He's a great finisher, but he does it against big teams in big games. So the only thing I've seen with Trossard is I don't know if he's best as a starter or as an impact sub, but he's definitely got a huge, huge role to play against Munich away, whether it's from the bench or from the start. But I think Zinchenko, just as much as he's not the best defender in the world, he's just got a bit more experience than Kiwior. And one, he drops into spaces that are a little bit more clever than Kiwior, and he's better at retaining the ball. So maybe we get away with some tighter situations. But also, he's not going to push up as tight behind a defender and get turned as Kiwior did. And I think Kiwior just... Look, over the course of the season, I think the opinion on him doesn't change for me, that he still looks like a centre-half player left-back. but he absolutely has been fantastic enough that he deserved to start that game. I just feel like he needs to get a bit more experience there before maybe he has those sort of big games in future. I don't see him starting out in Munich for that reason, even though he's been fantastic the last few weeks. So a little bit more now, someone a bit more experienced and someone that is better to deal with those wingers. You know, Tomiyasu, for example, playing at left back up against Salah a few times, dealt with him very well. And hopefully he'll do the same sort of thing. But Leroy, was it Sané, I think, that went off for Mike by Munich. I think that made a massive difference against us as well. I just, fingers crossed, he's out of the away game, hopefully.
Trevor?
Yeah, well, I'm really impressed, young Daniel. You like picking fault in me, so I'm not going to pick fault in you, you know, because I'm impressed with what you've seen from being in the stadium, obviously three quarters drunk, because the substitutions were perfect, absolutely worked perfectly. I think in the first half, Arteta was trying to get Ben White to push his side a bit from the right-hand side. He was gesticulating a lot, and it weren't coming off, obviously. So he's changed it in the second half, and you're right, he did drop the midfielders deeper, which allows Zinchenko to play that more forward infield role because he's got cover for himself. I was a bit worried when Zinchenko come on because I thought, I hope he's not leaving the spaces, but he didn't, because as you just said, they dropped the midfield back a few yards to cover that. As for Trossard, well, the lad's just getting better and better, isn't he? And he, as once again, I can't believe I'm agreeing with Dan again, but he's scoring very important goals, isn't he? He's there to put the ball in the net. And I don't know what I'm thinking about the second leg now. I'm thinking, what do we do? I don't think Kivior can start in the second leg. I don't know whether I want Tommy or Zinchenko. I think probably I'd want Tommy to start because I wouldn't want our midfield to have to drop so deep right at the start of the game out there to cover anything Zinchenko might miss. So it's a really interesting thing to take out of the game is that we looked two different sides. We looked like a side that was struggling to handle them until the substitutions came on, and then, wow, it changed completely. Turned the game, absolutely turned it on its head. So where do we go from here, boys? I'm not sure. I'm really not sure what I want to see happen in Munich.
I want to see us win. I want to see us get a 1-0 win for the Arsenal. And
no, you're not saying, no. Are you?
Yeah, oh, well, you ask a stupid question, get an obvious answer. Guys, the only last thing to talk about on this game was...
What's talking to you for?
I'm conscious that we've got a lot of football to talk about. Saka, in the last minutes, there was a claim for a penalty. Now, I've got a couple of different stills, and they're from two different angles, and it makes two different arguments. You've got this one here, which looks like Neuer's put his leg out, and... Saka looks like he's trying to get round him to get to the ball. And this one here looks more like Saka, maybe as he was going round him, left a trailing leg and took the opportunity to go down, but hopefully get the penalty. Either way, we have seen them in the Premier League. Who was it? Calvin Phillips for West Ham. There's one at Liverpool, Man United. Man United Liverpool game at the weekend. We've seen it loads and loads and loads on this. If there's contact in the box like that, for me, it should have been a penalty. And I know there's the other incident which we didn't see and nobody knew about until after the game. And I'm not even going to go into that Gabriel one at all, because that will take months to unpick. Dale, briefly, what's your view on this one?
I can see it from both points. I would rather take the view of a pro who's been in that situation. Ian Wright, in this example, Ian Wright says that's not a penalty. Ian Wright said he's running too quick. It's just two guys coming together. I, at first glance, thought it was a penalty. I keep changing my mind. The more I see it, the more I think it is, and I say it's not. But the one point somebody said to me, I heard on TalkSport this week, I think it was somebody said Saka stuck a leg out. When you're in full flow and you're running, next time you're running anywhere, try and stick a leg out. Try and stick a leg out when you're running at full whack like Saka is. You can't do it. It's that simple, because if you're not, your other leg gives up on you. So for that alone, I'm saying that's a penalty, because they're saying Saka you can't do it. You just cannot physically do it. I think that's a penalty every day of the week. In the Premier League especially, that gets given.
Dan, briefly.
Say briefly, I've got a full monologue prepared, Ferg, just for you.
I know you have.
Now, honestly, I'm flip-flopping like a good one on this one. Come out the ground and I thought, nope, not a pen. Watched it back and I thought, Stonewall. And now I'm a bit in between. But I think the way I've landed is, I think it's a penalty. I think he's also looking for it, Saka. And I think he needs to be a bit more clever in situations like that where, you see, we spoke about Harry Kane today. He would have made that look a lot smoother. Having said that, regardless of whether he's looking for it or not, I do think it's a penalty because I think Neuer sticks his leg out, catches him, and he's got nowhere to go.
Trev, final word.
Yeah, I can see why it weren't given. When you look at it from certain angles and you look at it first, you can see why it's not given. But what I would say to you is, don't look at the leg that Saka's stuck out. Look at his left leg. He's trying to plant it, and it gives the impression to me that he's trying to stay on his feet. So what I did was I went back, because he scores a lot of goals cutting in from the left, doesn't he, right? I went back and looked at one or two other ones where he's scored and cut inside like that. And his right leg does sort of fling out a bit. I'm not saying it flings out quite as much as it did the other night, but his right leg does go that way when he cuts inside. He leaves it behind a bit and he plants his left foot. So I could see why it weren't given. But being an Arsenal fan, my trust and my faith was with Saka. I believe Saka was fouled. So from my view, it's a penalty. But I can see why it wasn't given.
Okay. Right. We are going to look at the upcoming fixtures. Sorry, I've got a really bad indigestion today. So excuse me. We're going to look at the upcoming fixtures that we've got over the weekend. The early kickoff is Newcastle Spurs, then Brentford, Sheffield, Burnley, Brighton, Man City, Luton, Forest, Wolves, and Bournemouth, Man United on Saturday. Then you've got Liverpool, Palace, West Ham, Fulham, Arsenal, and Villa. We'll go into in more detail, and then Chelsea and Everton. Let's start with, where should we start? Should we start at the top and start with Newcastle versus Spurs?
Yeah.
Similar head-to-heads, Newcastle winning 24 and Spurs winning 25, 8 draws in all the 57 fixtures. The last five games are mostly behind scoring, with Spurs having 4-1 in December. And the last fixture, this fixture last season, was 6-1 to Newcastle. Both sides have similar form, 3 wins, 1 draw for each, and 1 loss in the last 5 games. Where are you on this one, Dan?
I am deciding between a 2-1 win for Newcastle and a 3-1 win for Newcastle, because not only do we not like Spurs, genuinely I think Newcastle's home record is still pretty good. I think they've won 10 games at home, crowd behind them. I fully expect them to pick up a little bit more, getting a few players back from injury. And I just feel like Spurs are on a little bit of a wobbly road at the minute as well. Not sure that they are as good as people have made them out to be in the media. I hope they lose, and I think they will.
Addiction. Good lad.
2 or 3. What? I'm going to go for 2-1 because they are a bit lucky and they might stay in it for a little bit longer than I want them to.
Just to help you out here, Ferg, this week, I know you moaned about it last week, so I'm making a note of all these scores for you. I'll put them on a spreadsheet, mate. Don't you worry.
Perfect. I've got 2-2.
So, Dan, what was your score, mate?
2-1 to Newcastle.
And Trevor?
Yeah, well, I just want to spend a second on this, Fergus, because while we're talking about that other lot from Middlesex, there was a bit of banter. There's been banter all week, hasn't there, on social media from that lot up the road. And Arsenal fans, what you should do is take great pleasure in it, because trust me, and Dan said I was a wise man for saying this. Trust me.
I said wise-ish, Trev.
Oh, right. Okay. So I'll take it, Dan. I'll take it all day long, mate. I'll take it. Tottenham fans, every single one of them that's giving you stick wishes their team was out there playing on Wednesday night. And when we were talking about Tifos last night, a Tottenham fan popped up today and put a picture of how Tifo is to dare is to do. Lads, to dare is to do. Do you know how silly that is coming from a club like Tottenham? Haven't won a league championship in 2 generations, 3 generations. To dare is to do. It's a bit embarrassing. Please don't do it to yourselves. Look for other banter, Tottenham fans. Look for other banter, but don't give it a big to dare is to do, because it really is. It's a bit cringy, really. Anyway, as for the game, I think Newcastle are going to be really strong at home. I agree with Dan. Tottenham ain't as smart as they think they are. I'm going to go 6-0 to Newcastle.
6-0. And Del,
I'll keep mine brief, but I'm gonna agree with Ferg on this one. I'm going for a draw. I'm going 2-2.
2-2. Okay, the next game that we've got is Brentford versus Sheffield.
Left side of the podcast. Left side giving it a bit of a boring prediction, isn't it, really?
All right, 38-0.
Come on, left side.
Listen, people, don't forget to put your score predictions in the comments box. I love seeing the different opinions come through there, and we'll get an idea then. I've got to stop now because Fergus is getting the ump with me, and when he takes his glasses off and rubs his eyes, that means you're in massive trouble.
Yeah, you are. I'm not well. Brentfield, Sheffield, last and only meeting. Sheffield won 1-0 at Bramall Lane. The form is identical, 3 draws and 2 losses. In the last five, Brentford 3-3 at Villa, and Sheffield United 2-2 at home to Chelsea. I've gone for a home win, 2-1 to Brentford. Trevor, I'll come to you first on this.
Yeah. I just want to take 10 minutes talking about this game. No, not really, Ferg. I don't at all. I think Brentford will be too good with Sheffield United, and I think they'll win. I think they'll win 3-1, Ferg.
3-1. Okay. Dan?
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1.
Trevor, is that 3-1 Sheffield United, you say?
No, 3-1 to Brentford.
All right.
I'm going to go 2-1 to Brentford. I think I agree. I think Sheffield United have had their chance. If they was going to bounce back and have a bit of a run, they've had a few draws, but I think that's as good as they're going to get. Brentford, I think, are just going to nick it and push their sort of back end form to stay up. So 2-1 Brentford.
And finally, Del.
I am slightly against the opposite of what Dan said there. I mean, I think Sheffield United played very well against Liverpool the other week, and I think they've seen some of there to think they'll get a point out of this. So I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. Okay, next game on the list is Burnley versus Brighton. More often than not, this fixture is a draw. Six of the last fixtures that they've had was draw. Burnley have won 2. Brighton have won 2 out of the last 11 encounters. And the last met in December was a 1-1 draw. Burnley have lost at home to Everton. And sorry, I've written something wrong down here. It was just throwing me. And Burnley have won 1 and drawn 4 of the last 5 last fixtures. Brighton have lost 3, including a 3-0 loss to Arsenal, and 1-1, which was a 1-0 to Forest, and 1 draw in the last 5. I'm going for a Brighton win. I thought Brighton, whilst we gave them a 3-0 good education, I thought they were a decent team, and I think they're a decent side. And despite how well, Vincent Kompany, who's now got a pitch side ban, I think, as well, has tried to school these. I think the Premier League is just too big for them. Dale, I'll come to you first on this one.
I don't know. I think if Burnley are fighting for their lives here, I think they need something out of this. Although I think Brighton are a decent side, I don't think that was what we saw at our place was the real Brighton. I do think Burnley have got something to fight for, so I'm going to go for another draw. It's my third draw in a row. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. Dan?
I'm going to go for 4-1 to Brighton. I think they have struggled for goals lately, but I think they're going to come good, Brighton. I think Burnley struggle. Their home form is pretty much the same as their away form. I think they're struggling to get to grips with the Premier League. They haven't closed up as I expected them to towards the end of the season to try and get some results. They seem to be a little bit stubborn in the way they're playing, and I think they play good football, but they're not as good at it as the rest of the Premier League. And I think it shows. So I think they'll get turned over in this one by Brighton.
And finally, Gunnar Hilsey.
I go the other way to the boys on here. I think that Brighton are not offering a lot up front at the moment. Burnley are not offering a lot full stop, but I'm giving them home advantage. And I've got Burnley to win 1-0.
1-0 Burnley. That'll be a turn up for the books. Next up, 3 o'clock on Saturday, Man City versus Luton. I'm predicting a 4-1 on this one. City won the reverse fixture 2-1 in December, but I expect, being at the Etihad, a more dominant display. City have won 3 and drawn 2 of the last 5, and Luton only 1 win, which was last week against Bournemouth, a 2-1 win. They've had a draw versus Forest, and otherwise it's losses. Trev, let's go with you first.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Ferg, because I've been thinking a lot about the three teams at the top of the league this week. I think that City are still favourites. I think they've got the better run into the season. And I think City will win this game comfortably. I'm looking at City scoring five nearly. I think they're going to really turn it on and go for it.
Okay. Dale?
I've matched Trev's there. I think City have know they've got to make some goals up on the rest of us in the Premier League. They're 11 behind us at the moment. I think this is one of the games they can do it. I'm going with Trev 5-0.
5-0. And Dan?
I'm going with another 115 charges and a 3-0 win for Man City. I think Man City will rest a few players because they've also got the big game against Real Madrid coming up. But even with them resting some key players, they're still a great squad. I think the top three teams will win the rest of their home games, and I don't expect any different from City. So 3-0.
Okay, Forest versus Wolves played each other three times in the Premier League. Two encounters were 1-1 draw, and in October 22, Wolves won one of the games 1-0. It's not normally a high scoring game. Forest have won one game at home to Fulham at 3-1 and drawn 2, lost 2. Wolves lost to West Ham last week. It was a bit of a controversy in the last final few minutes over a penalty in VAR. It was a 2-1 loss to West Ham, and have only won one in five, a 2-1 win against Fulham. They've won 1, drawn 1 and lost 3. I'm going for Forest win, because if they can get that atmosphere there, I think they can go, and I'm going Forest 1-0. Dan, let's go to you first.
I can't call this game, if I'm totally honest. And I think when I can't call it, I think it's showing maybe it'll be a draw. I know the last three games between them have been a 1-1 draw. I think it will be something similar. I'm going to go for 1-1.
1-1. Dan? Dale?
I'm going to go with you on this slightly different scoreline, but I'm going for a Forest 2-1 win.
2-1 win. And Trevor?
Yeah, I like watching both of these sides play on their day. They're both capable of a good performance. And I'm with Dan. I've gone for a 2-2, though. I've gone 2-2.
Okay. Next up, we've got Bournemouth versus Man United. Bournemouth have won the away fixture 3-0 in December, but United seem to be a team in total disarray and turmoil. There's even talk now at the moment of Ten Hag being sacked. I don't know if it's the director of football or one of the management team has stepped down, and there's a lot of changes going to happen there. The form Bournemouth are the form side with 3 wins and a draw and 1 loss, versus Man United only getting 1 win in the last 5. The 1-1, drawn 2 and lost 2. I've gone for a Bournemouth 3-1 win. Trevor, let's go to you on this one.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ferg. I think that Bournemouth are good enough to beat Man U. Man U, they're capable. I say it every week, they remind me of us of 4 or 5 years ago. They're capable of good performance, but very rarely will they put two good performances back to back. I think Bournemouth are good enough to beat Man U 2-1 at the weekend.
2-1. Dan?
Yeah, I mean, Bournemouth are in good form. They've done well against the teams that are lower down, but they seem to struggle against the top sides. So in theory, they should be all right here then against Man United. But I just get the feeling that United might nick a win here for some reason. They do tend to dig out some results when they don't deserve it. I think it could be like a 2-1, to be honest with you.
2-1 United.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I think it'll be a high-scoring game. I do fancy Bournemouth for the win, but I do think United will score as well. I think United are capable of scoring against Bournemouth. So I've gone for a 3-2 Bournemouth win.
3-2. And then we're on to Sunday. Sunday, this Sky early kickoff is Liverpool versus Crystal Palace. There have been 2 draws in the last five meetings. But Liverpool have won the away fixture 2-1. Palace have only won 5 of these fixtures, of the 29 fixtures. Form the polar opposite to each other. Liverpool have 3 wins and 2 draws. The last game was the 2-2 game against Man United. And Crystal Palace have had 2 draws and 3 losses. I've gone for Liverpool 3, Crystal Palace 0. Dale, we'll go to you first.
I think if anybody's capable of springing a surprise against Liverpool, I think it's Palace. They've done it a couple of times in the past as well. Although I don't think they've got enough to win. So I'm going to go for a draw in this. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw. And I'm going to go as far as say Palace go 2-0 up as well. Liverpool put it back 2-2.
Trevor, they've done okay against City Palace. I know it was 4-2 loss, but they did hold their own a little.
Yeah, they did hold their own a little. As I said just now, I've been thinking a lot about the top three this week. And my thoughts are that if any of the top three are going to drop away, it's going to be Liverpool. I just think that City and Arsenal can push on. Well, hopefully. But I don't think Palace are strong enough to win at Liverpool. I don't. I genuinely don't. I think Liverpool are going to probably beat them about 2-0. I'm going to go for 2-0 with Liverpool. Palace ain't bad, but not up there. I don't think they can do it.
And Dan?
Yeah, Palace are a little bit of a bogey team at times to Liverpool, but I do think the top sides will win their home games. I think Liverpool will bounce back a little bit after United. I think their tricky games will come where they'll drop away, maybe away from home. But I do think Palace will give them a good game, but I think they'll lose. So I think it'll be 3-1
Liverpool. 3-1 Liverpool. Were you missing a score for me, Del?
Yeah, it was a Brighton game. What was your prediction? Burnley-Brighton.
Burnley-Brighton. Brighton 2-1.
2-1 Brighton. Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Not on Sky. We got West Ham versus Fulham. Fulham have won the home fixture 5-0 back in December. But their away form isn't great. They've lost three out of the five games that I'm looking at. They've lost three of them. West Ham won the last game against Wolves, which we talked about, 2-1. But is there only one win in the last five? They've won one, drawn three, and lost one. Fulham 1-1, drawn one, lost three. West Ham have been a little bit unlucky, but West Ham, like Liverpool, will be in Europe tonight. So will that have an impact on them, Dan?
I think it will, to be honest with you. And also, I think they're missing Bowen, aren't they, as well, West Ham? So if Bowen's not fit, that might be a bit of a stretch too far for them against Fulham. I think having said that, Fulham, a different team away from home than they are at home. If it was a home, I would definitely be going for a Fulham win. But just for Fulham's away form, I think it's going to be a close game, maybe a goal in it, like a 2-1 West Ham, or they might nick a draw. But I think West Ham might just nick this one and go 2-1 West Ham.
Okay. Trevor?
Yeah, I had no idea that Bowen was out injured, Dan, to be honest, mate. And there's absolutely no doubt, and I say this as an Arsenal fan, Bowen has been a shiny light this year for West Ham and England. I'm really impressed with that lad. And if he's not playing, it'll make a big difference. But thinking about it, West Ham at home, Fulham away, I think it'll be a tight London derby, nick and tuck, but I've got West Ham to win it 1-0.
1-0 to West Ham. And Del?
Again, I've gone for a 2-1 West Ham win. I think if it was a reverse fixture, I'd fancy Fulham, but I do fancy West Ham at home. 2-1.
Okay, we'll go back. We'll go back to the 5:30 kickoff, 4:30 kickoff, which is the Arsenal game, and we'll look at Monday night's fixture, which is Chelsea versus Everton. The two sides are a mess, but Chelsea are officially free from relegation threat because they're on 44 points. But Everton have had 2 points deducted from them, along with the previous six, and also they could face a further points deduction. They're desperate for points. It's a hard one. It's probably one of the harder ones to call because both teams are just inconsistent. I think I've gone for Chelsea to nick it 2-1. Dale, I'll come to you first on this one.
I am really confused when it comes to Everton.
The form, just to give you, Chelsea have won 1-3 and lost 1-2 and lost 3. Everton 1-1, drawn 1, lost 3.
Chelsea confuse the life out of me because when you watch them sometimes, they look like they can actually string a decent few passes together. Everton, on the other hand, I don't think they're all that. I really don't. I don't think they're in trouble enough to go down. But for me, I think Chelsea can have way too much for them. I'm going for a Chelsea 3-1 win.
Okay, Trevor?
Yeah, they are a bit of a confusing side, Chelsea. Fergie, you know, they have started picking up a bit recently. And they've got the odd result. I don't want to see Everton go down. I have a soft spot for Everton. I really genuinely do. I want to see Everton get a result, but I think Chelsea just might nick it. In a high score, I think it'll be 3-2, Chelsea.
3-2. And finally, Dan.
Yeah, I think you could flip a coin on this one. Honestly, Chelsea just yo-yo all over the place, but Everton's actually a better side away from home than they are at home this year, form-wise. So I do think Everton will score, but I think you've still got to look at the teams and say on their day, Chelsea are not a bad side, even though they're terribly inconsistent. So I think I'll go 3-1 Chelsea.
3-1 Chelsea. Okay. And then on to the main event, the one that everybody's waiting for, Aston Villa versus Arsenal versus Aston Villa. David Coote is the official. Nearly. David Coote is the official. Officially, in my view, the worst referee in the Premier League. I think he's absolutely awful. And we got a fourth official, Paul Tierney, so it gets even worse. Lineups, I'm expecting a very similar lineup to the starting lineup we had against Bayern Munich. Our head-to-head form with them is 31 wins and 14 draws versus their 12 wins as first versus fifth. We lost back in December to a McGinn 1-0 goal. A game that we... It's one of those games, a game that I thought we were hard done by to lose. I think we put in a good enough performance. I think added to the fact that Villa are very strong at home, but on the road, they're a little bit weaker. Arsenal have won the remaining four fixtures out of the five that we've had. And we're on four wins. Four wins and a draw over the last five games. I've gone for a 3-0 Arsenal win on this. Another clean sheet. That'll be 15 clean sheets, I think. We conceded. We didn't concede to City. It's 15 clean sheets in a row it will be. Trevor, your thoughts on the game, the lineup, what are you expecting? Would you change much? Bearing in mind, we've got Munich on Wednesday night as well.
Yeah, well, you can look at this from all angles, can't you? You know, you just mentioned the Villa and the Fulham games that we lost around the Christmas period. You know, if we come up just short this year, they're the two games that I'm going to look at and think, well, I think that's where we lost it. And those two games we should never have lost, and we ended up losing them both. And I think that'll be, if we do come up short, that's what I'll be looking at. This weekend, Arsenal against Villa. I want to see us go full strength, Ferg. But the thing is, when I say I want to see us go full strength, I'm looking at possibly 14 players that could turn out, you know, 11 from 14. And I think that's still our full strength. We've got a lovely squad. They're all fit now. So I don't mind if Partey comes in. But Villa are a decent side. So I want to see our best team start. I wouldn't be surprised if Zinchenko doesn't start a left back instead of Kivior. The other three backs, you don't change. Jorginho, to me, looked like he could do with a rest. So maybe Partey and Rice in the middle. And see who's fit to play up front, because I'm happy with any of them. There was a little bit of doubt about Havertz on Wednesday, weren't there? And I absolutely disagree with that. I still think that we play better and we win games better with Havertz playing in the number nine role. I like it, though, when Jesus is playing alongside him on either side. It looks good.
It does. Dan, what's your score, by the way, Trev?
Sorry, mate. Oh, yeah, Ferg, you know what? I'm with you, mate. I'm going to go 3-0.
Okay. Dan?
Did you go 3-0, Ferg?
I did.
So you don't think they're going to take it deep this week, no?
And take it to the limit. Yeah.
Yeah? All right, then, mate.
I've not made that mistake. I've written all my own stuff now. I've not plagiarised nobody.
No, that's good. You can't slip up then. I'm going to agree with you, Trevor, quite a lot of what you said. I'm going to agree with you, Trevor, on a lot of what you said. I think Zinchenko comes into the side probably for that game. I think Jesus might come in. And I think Partey might come in as well for Jorginho. But I can't see too many changes. I think two or three is what we'll likely see. I think we were really, really unlucky earlier in the season that we played Villa when they was absolutely the top of their form at home. So, and even still, we could have got and probably should have got something there. But you've got a key man that got suspended in Douglas Luiz for the last game. So that, for me, is the difference maker against Villa. And I think our midfield will dominate theirs. So I'm expecting us to score a few goals. I think it will be three goals. I do think we'll concede at home, though. I struggle to back us at the minute to keep a clean sheet at home. I think it's 13 goals we conceded in 15 games at home. We do need to tighten up a little, but I do think with the threats they've got, with the likes of Watkins, Diaby and Bailey as well, I think they're a good attacking side. But yeah, we'd be too good for them because we're the Arsenal. So 3-1.
3-1. Okay. And Del, finally.
I agree with what all you guys have said, a bit of a combination, to be fair. I agree with Dan. I think they're a very good attacking side. I think they've got plenty in there, but Douglas Luiz will be a huge miss for them. So I do think we'll concede, if I'm honest, but I think we'll match what City did against them. I think we'll beat them 4-1. So I'm going Arsenal 4, Villa 1.
Ferg, I know you want to rush off, mate, but our friend Arnie has just put a very, very relevant post on here, and we didn't see Villa. Villa didn't put their strongest side out against City by a long way, did they? A long way.
Concentrating on the conference, aren't they?
Absolutely. So is that going to be the same against us, or are they going to change their tune a bit? You know, it's interesting thought. You know, Emery, I can't see Emery going weak against us, but if he's done it against City, why not us?
Yeah, and if we look at the table, let me bring the table up here. It's just going to come up in a second. If we look at the table, Villa have dropped down into fifth. I thought they were firmly in fourth. It's on goal difference. But, you know, depending on how Villa, West Ham, Arsenal and City and the like get on in, and Liverpool get on in Europe, they could get Champions League football with fifth spot. But in reality, is Champions League football that bit of a step too far for this Villa side just yet? They might go in and do what Newcastle did and had a foray and it got a bit of money, but then, you know, dropped down the leagues due to the injury and the pressures. And we know the type of football. We've seen it ourselves. The difference in the type of football, as much as we talk about the Premier League being the best and the strongest and fastest league, the style of football in the Champions League is completely different. It's so much harder to get your head around. Trev, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, mate, you've hit the nail on the head, you know. And I do keep it in the back of my mind that we've not gone into the deep rounds of the Champions League for 14 years. But I said it against Porto when everybody was saying, oh, we're going to walk over them at home. It's different gravy, Champions League. Different gravy. Teams can change their tactics, their formation, not from game to game, from minute to minute. They're that good. They really are that good. And so when it comes to us in the Champions League, we've just got to play our own game on Wednesday and win it. As for the league, I think Villa might have given up on it a bit, you know. I think Emery might be thinking, this isn't my best opportunity now. We're comfortably in the European places. But, you know, I'm losing track here, right? I'll tell you why I'm losing track, boys, and I'm drifting. It's not difficult to do with a man of my age, by the way. The West Ham Leverkusen's game kicked off, and I'm just waiting for Xhaka to tear West Ham a new one, to be honest. Although, I've got to be careful because I don't want Ferg's mate Kevin to get upset. You know what I mean? That I've said that. But at the end of the day, I'm looking at that. So I've forgotten what the question was now, Ferg. So
Trev, on that, Trev, just to say you think they've given up on the league. I think Emery's smarter than that. I don't think Emery's given up on the league. I think that Emery knows they're probably going to finish around fifth. If he puts all his eggs in one basket and goes to that Premier League, right, the chances are he may not get that fourth spot. However, if England outperforms Spain and Germany in Europe this season, we get an extra place in the Champions League. Do you think Emery's got one eye on that? To go, you know what, if we go for Europe, we've got a good chance of getting England. If we look at it like that, look at it as an England, Spain, Germany thing. Do you think he's got one eye going, we can do our part here. We can push for Europe and get that extra Champions League spot.
He's on 60 points, the same as Spurs, separated by 3 goals. His nearest rival, although they've got a game in hand, is Man United on 49 points. So they're 11
exactly.
goals behind.
Exactly. So would you fancy your chances going ahead? Yeah, you're right. He's guaranteed fifth pretty much, right? Or fourth or fifth. Would you fancy your chances going head-to-head with Spurs and going all or nothing? Or would you go, you know what, we've got a chance at Europe this year, and if we do well in this, even if we don't win it, if we outperform these other nations, we get an extra Champions League space. I don't think Emery's stupid enough to give up on the league. I don't think he is. I don't think he's that daft.
I would have thought they had budgeted and targeted to get Europa League either by winning the conference or by the league position. And the way it's finished at the minute, Emery will have achieved that as a minimum. I think that's fantastic. He's done a good job. He didn't fit for us, but, you know, I don't begrudge him anything at all. Guys, I know I've cut it quite sharp and everything else. I'm not feeling 100%, but thank you, everybody, for joining. And thank you, guys, for joining. We will struggle on Monday to do a podcast. The two guys are in Munich. I'm away.
We won't struggle.
Three of us, by the way. Me, Trev, and Fergus are going.
So just we've got to touch two. I promise you, mate, no more than 2 minutes on this Munich game, because it's massive, right? It's massive. And all you fans out there, don't you doubt, right? There's 3,000 of us going out to Munich, right? And we will sing and shout and scream our heads off. And look at the game against Munich this week that we drew 2-2 and think how we performed. I don't think we can perform worse this week, right? I don't think we can perform worse this week. We're going to go to Munich and we're going to play to the best of our abilities. We're going to play a bit cagey and we're going to beat Bayern Munich and we're going to work our way into the sunshine in Madrid for a semi-final.
Yes, okay. We are.
So what's somebody for West Ham, Fulham and Chelsea, Everton?
Sorry, Ferg, I just didn't get your West Ham, Fulham and your Chelsea, Everton. I'll tell you why it's important, because Hente has messaged me on Twitter saying, can you send over the predictions? He wants to keep an eye on them. So I want to make sure I've got full house.
Will do. I'll give them to you in a minute. Right, Monday may be a struggle. We'll keep an eye on social media and either the guys will do something drunk from Munich early on. Trevor has got control to all the buttons, so he can do something.
You will control in Munich. That's.
Yeah, I on the other hand may not be able to attend, but I will be watching from afar. And next week's Thursday night show will probably move to Friday because by the time the guys get back from Munich and I get back from the week away with the wife, I think Friday will be the earliest. Del, Dan, Trev, been an absolute pleasure.
Just quick, Trev, I think we should call the podcast on Monday Mischievous Madness in Munich, and that would be a good way to start.
It's got me again. Just don't forget, Ferg, we are the Arsenal. We are the Arsenal going to Munich.
We are the best.
Our boys won't let us down. Our boys won't let us down.
They won't. Boys, have a great evening. See you all Sunday and sing up when you're out there in Munich for us. Up the Arsenal, fuck the Spurs and Munich.
Thanks for listening to Guns and Yellow Ribbons, an Arsenal podcast by Arsenal fans for Arsenal fans. Follow us on Facebook at Guns and Yellow Ribbons or Twitter at Guns and Ribbons. And remember to rate and review us too. Up the Arsenal.